Blog Talk Radio. Hello, Jay. How you doing?
I love that song.
Isn't it great? I thought it would go with the wonderful warm weather we're having here in New York today.
Hi, Dave.
The blustery, snowy, warm weather. Hi, Jay.
It's rebooting the news number 75.
75 is a big one.
Yeah.
It's a big one. And you've, like, done this whole prep job for us. I mean,
yeah.
I hear that all we're going to talk about today is Lady Gaga.
I said on Twitter last night that I was very much looking forward to today's podcast and that there was only one thing to talk about. And this invited many people, not just you, but many people
hamsters,
to joke.
Hamsters.
To joke about what that could be.
We'll talk about hamsters. Yeah. What were some of the other jokes that you heard?
Oh.
Whiskey, probably.
Yeah. I can't remember. Each one was more stupid than the next.
Well, that's the whole point of being stupid, is to be as stupid as you possibly can be.
Right.
Yeah.
But in fact, we do have something that I kind of feel this show has been leading up to talk about today.
In our wildest dreams.
Yeah, as you said, we're having a rebooting the news moment here with WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
Which is definitely true.
Yeah, it boils down to, what do you prefer? Scandalous truth or mush? And most of what we get from the news media is mush. And all of a sudden, mush won't do, because there goes WikiLeaks, and they're giving us all kinds of stuff to think about, which is not a bad idea, actually.
Well, I think it's like a crevice is opening up,
yep.
Or
yeah,
something we thought was anchored to the shore is starting to break
it's
apart.
Good. It's good, it's good,
yeah.
It's good. It's like, you just don't know
what to... You can hear all the cracking. And
people want to go back to business as usual. I mean, they want to apply the same rules that they always do to things. And, you know, so therefore we're having a boycott, maybe.
Yeah, they want to repair things. They want to repair the
But
breach.
The thing is, we'll need new institutions. Oh, I can't hear myself now. I'm all right? Okay. That we'll need new institutions.
We need new institutions.
Yeah.
I'm with you 100%
on
that.
That's the thing, is like when people go to say, well, you know, Amazon really screwed us, it's really hard if you put yourselves in Amazon's shoes to say that they did. First of all, we don't know what they know, so it's impossible to say.
Wait, we're getting ahead of
ourselves. You don't want to go there? Okay.
No, we can
go there.
Why
don't you drive it? Drive it. You drive the process.
Well, let's just summarize a little bit of what we want to talk about first.
Go for it. Yeah.
WikiLeaks released this huge trove, or started to release this huge trove of diplomatic cables, which actually aren't the biggest secrets we have. They're just secrets.
I wasn't clear on that. So they haven't released all of their stuff yet?
They haven't released anywhere near all of their stuff. They had 250,000 cables, and only, I think, less than 1,000 have been released. But it's not just that. It's that there's nothing in those cables that's top secret. There are secret things, but top secret is the highest classification.
So do they explain why they didn't release everything?
They haven't had too much transparency on that. I believe the reason, however, is that they're very much working in concert with the press organizations that are verifying and doing a kind of due diligence with each release to see that no individual is harmed by them, which raises one of the most interesting questions I have about WikiLeaks, we can get into later, which is, to what degree does legitimacy matter to WikiLeaks? I think that's a really complicated, interesting question. But they've been releasing these cables, and they're very embarrassing to governments around the world. And as a result, we've seen a response. And the first wave was a wave of denial of service attacks. Then
Where were those coming from?
We don't know.
We don't know anything about them.
Nothing.
Honestly, Jay, we don't even know that they exist.
Well...
No, we don't. I'm telling you, if you can show me how you know that they exist, I'd be interested in seeing that, because we don't know that they exist. We have WikiLeaks telling us that they have, but that's not evidence.
We have other companies saying that they do.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the EveryDNS people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they haven't quantified it. They haven't told us what their capacity was
well,
to fight. You know, everybody gets denial of service attacks. It's a commonplace thing. It's like saying, you know, I have a hangnail Well, maybe you could die from a hangnail.
I'd be surprised if they aren't, but we don't know for sure, and we certainly don't know where from
Well, but isn't that how we're supposed to do this stuff? Aren't we supposed to say, according to WikiLeaks, they are suffering denial-of-service attacks?
Yeah.
Until you actually can prove it.
Okay.
Because I think we've been manipulating. Well, I know we're being manipulated. Look, they're only releasing a small fraction of the trove, right?
Okay.
That's
let me get through what happened and see if you can.
I can't let
how
you
many,
do that.
How many?
I mean, we have to have.
How many premises?
We have to argue out every little detail of this thing before.
Some said there were denial of service attacks.
That's all I wanted you to say.
Then Amazon Web Services kicked WikiLeaks off its cloud servers,
including the Library of Congress.
Then every DNS.net, a company I didn't even know about, stopped serving.
Nor did anybody else.
Yeah, stopped serving the domain WikiLeaks.org, which was difficult because then it meant that if you went to that site, you didn't actually get the site.
By the way, a little side note there.
Yeah.
One of my DNS hosts, EasyDNS, got some of the press was confused, and they said EasyDNS instead of every DNS,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden we started getting denial of service attacks.
Wow.
Through so we do know that there were some, but mostly they were just annoyance attacks of people threatening to boycott them or something. You know,
uh-huh.
It's all this powerlessness on the internet. Mm-hmm. Just that side note. I just want to add that there.
Surplus powerlessness.
Because we're not going to come back to the DNS situation, probably.
Then a company called Tableau Software removed data visualizations WikiLeaks had up. Then PayPal,
that was a
in the
one.
Most serious move, I think, of all, cut off their supply of donations by kicking them off. Then the Library of Congress did what?
They blocked the domain from their computers.
Oh.
So if you were accessing the internet from the Library of Congress.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's a very Chinese sort
that's
of thing.
Amazing.
Yeah. Now, here, Jay, let me ask you a question about this. Just a little sidebar. I won't go very far with this. Is that, suppose you were a member of Congress.
Yeah.
Do you think they blocked it for them?
Well, that's what I was about to.
I don't believe they would do that.
Right. Freedom
so it's
for me and
it's
not
for you
for
and
me,
but not for. I mean, well, I'm just inferring that. I'm just, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of it.
But, interestingly enough, Twitter has not kicked WikiLeaks off.
Yes, and that would be
Twitter.
Very serious if they did. That would be much more serious than any of them.
Yeah. So,
however, there is a scandal floating around there about why hasn't it been a trending topic?
Yeah, I don't quite understand that.
We don't have any data on that. Maybe the answer is, well, you guys think a lot of people are talking about it, but in fact, most people don't care.
Okay, now, taken together, what do these actions tell us?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, several things. First of all, we're going to have to fight for an open internet. I mean, that was probably always true, but now we see how true that is. And like in any situation where things come to blows or things come to conflict or violence, we see who lines up where.
Yeah.
And so we have a sense of who the OpenNet's friends are and are not.
There aren't any friends of the OpenNet. There aren't any. The OpenNet doesn't have any friends.
Doesn't have any friends.
Does it?
What?
I mean, who are the... Name me a friend of the OpenNet.
You mean a powerful institutional
friend? No, anybody. You and I are friends of the OpenNet, right? Right?
Yeah,
but
people
around
the world.
How far are we willing to go to be friends of the OpenNet?
I don't know.
Well, you see, that's the thing is, nobody has asked us to do anything, so it's safe and easy for us to be friends of the OpenNet. However, for a company like Amazon or Every DNS or even the Library of Congress, which isn't even a company, it's not so easy to be friend of the OpenNet. It costs them something. You know, I've been blasted for saying I'm not boycotting Amazon, and some of the attacks have been, you know, kind of nasty. But I immediately want to know, well, first of all, are you boycotting them? Second of all, what are you giving up?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you're not using any of their web services, if you haven't built on their infrastructure, then, yeah, you can give up, and it's a nice gesture, but it's a meaningless gesture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who's actually willing to suffer for the internet is a really good question.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I mean,
but isn't that what makes Assange a compelling figure? One of the things that makes him.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about him. So, you know, I have
Well, he's certainly willing to suffer for I mean, the guy's probably going to wind up in a prison for the, you know, a long time.
Think so?
Yeah.
Really?
Definitely.
Well, okay, let's put that down on the list of things that you believe. I don't know how this is going to turn out, so I can't say that.
Oh, it's a guess.
It's a guess, but you said definitely. I'm not.
Well, I definitely believe
that.
I'm
not trying
that,
to. Yeah. Good. And Jay, I'm not one of these guys who's going to, like, try and make you out to be some, you know, I'm not trying to corner you. I'm not like, whatever, Christiana Amanpour or Wolf Blitzer.
Trying to pin me down.
Yes, I'm trying to get you to say something we can make headlines with. You know, I just sort of want to
know. I'm not making any headlines.
Yeah, no, there aren't. This is not the place.
No, I do. I think it's just a matter of time. Yeah. And then the question becomes, will WikiLeaks go on?
But maybe, okay, so now I wrote a piece. Well, there's been a lot written, okay? And there's a lot of really interesting questions that come out of this.
There's been a lot of good stuff written.
Right.
It's crazy.
So I asked
the
question
of commentary
about Berkman, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you know, as I understood it, this is what Berkman was founded for. It's a Berkman Institute for the Internet and Society.
At Harvard Law School.
Is it Harvard? It's no longer at Harvard Law School. It is? Harvard. No, it's not part of Harvard Law School anymore.
Just part of Harvard. Okay.
Right. And so Internet and Society seems to be what this is about.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, right square. Sorry, but this one landed on your desk, whoever
right.
it is that's in charge. You know, so I don't know that it's reasonable to expect them to do anything, but something like that. Now I think about John Palfrey, who was one of the founders of Berkman, who has now gone on to be the head of the library at Harvard Law School.
And a great guy.
Well, of course, he's a friend of mine, and I love him. I mean, I think he's a wonderful person, but that's an aside,
yeah.
Okay? You know, because I don't want to try to make great guy equate to
friend of the internet. Yeah.
Well, friend of the internet, and because for him, he's got the decision that that the Library of Congress has, but he has it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, there was this advisory given that was, I think, then retracted to students at Columbia University.
Yes, I know about
that
it.
That said, if you want to be have a career in diplomacy, do not comment on this. Okay,
do not put WikiLeaks on your Twitter feed.
Right, but don't even comment about it.
Right. It was amazing that notice.
It was amazing.
If that had gone out at this school from our career services person, I would have gone ballistic.
You should have.
That was unbelievable.
Unbelievable is right. However, it did raise a very interesting question that had up until that moment been in the background, but it was also mentioned in the Berkman buzz. Because can you expect to get help from lawyers here? Because, Jay, a lot of lawyers want to go into government.
Yeah.
Don't they have a big conflict of interest? They do. They are not likely to help us here or be a friend of the internet because this is about, you know, their future, you know. It's like if you ever get sued by a lawyer, by your lawyer, which has actually happened to me,
mm-hmm.
do not expect to get help from other lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
They won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this is a case, you know, it's like as if a doctor had an interest aligned with some disease.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that because I'm in favor of you having that disease.
This is what's so interesting, though, Dave, for this case for the press because...
Oh, totally.
Because in the past...
What a hot potato!
Like in the case of the Pentagon Papers, which is ritualistically compared to, but in other cases as well, it's been the press that has been the unpopular one. Right, that wanted to publish, looking for friends and asking who would protect it, and this is what makes the ambivalent, conflicted, neurotic reaction within the press to WikiLeaks so fascinating.
Unsupportable.
Because the WikiLeaks is them just at a later stage of development, you know, in a broader stage. Because
they didn't have any competition in the Pentagon Papers. There was no other distribution mechanism possible.
Right.
They were gatekeepers in that time frame. If they didn't publish it, it wasn't going to get out. Right?
But they were the Assange figures.
Absolutely,
what I'm
and they were the ones that stuck their neck out. Same thing with Watergate, right?
Which was totally
right. However, this is something that I found absolutely fascinating in the period of the Communication Decency Act in 1995-1996. Jay, we never got a editorial from the New York Times saying this was a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
that free speech on the internet was something worth defending, And I called for them to do it. I wrote about this endlessly. When the people who defend free speech for themselves so strenuously, all of a sudden when it's about somebody else, you don't hear from them. Now, we have yet to hear from the New York Times editorial page about the WikiLeaks situation.
No, but we heard from the public editor. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. What did he say?
I'll boil it down. He said basically, Assange is a scum, and the Times did a great job publishing the documents he helped provide.
Oh, my God.
Oh, pathetic.
Oh, what a hypocrite.
And just one moment. Joe Klein of Time Magazine says, if a single foreign national is rounded up and put in jail because of a leaked cable, this entire anarchic exercise in freedom stands as a human disaster.
And Glenn Greenwald,
Assange
completely
is a criminal, yeah, and he should be in jail. This is a columnist for Time Magazine.
Well, Time Magazine put him on the cover as a hero, though.
Well, yes and no.
I had a feeling that the no part was in, the copy was no, but the headline was hero.
Time Magazine's editor, Richard Stengel, was on CNN's Reliable Sources with Jeff Jarvis on Sunday, and he too was denouncing Assange as a psychopath and an anarchist.
Don't these people have consciences? I mean, don't they understand? Do they have educations? They have any sense?
I think they haven't sat down to think clearly about this. I don't think they
really.
Yeah, I think that there's
Joe Klein is, you know, Glenn Greenwald picked up that. He collected a whole bunch of quotes like that, and he asked the obvious question: how many people would die if they weren't published? Right. I mean, you know, how many people would have died if they hadn't been published, and some diplomat in the future felt he could get away with, you know, acceptable losses, what do they call that? Collateral damage. You know, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people died in Iraq because it wasn't very clear. You know what? Somebody else said this. I don't remember where I read this. I think this was just a comment on my blog. That, you know, there is some shocking truths coming out here, but what's even more shocking is how a lot of these truths were available before and nobody did anything about them.
Right. Well, this is a big problem.
Yeah. It's a reasonable conclusion that they will not do, that we will not do anything about all this. This is why Joe Klein is safe in making this statement.
Well, I wrote about that in my post in July about WikiLeaks, that one of the fears I had about the Afghan war logs being released then was that people will see it. They'll see what a huge problem and disaster we have brewing in Afghanistan. But they'll also conclude that it's so big and we're sunk in so deep, that the bigger the revelation, the more the sense of powerlessness. Yeah. I think this is, to me, a lot of what lies in the background of this case. And Simon Jenkins of The Guardian got at this in a post that's linked at our site. When accountability fails as hugely as it has, when there is no audit, when huge mistakes are known about but nothing happens, when all of those institutional measures for making people take responsibility completely collapse, the only way to get response, the only option then is disclosure. And disclosure is brutal, it's messy, it's completely inelegant, it doesn't make good distinctions, lots of things get, you know, smashed, it's crude, but it's the only thing there is when accountability fails. And this is where I think the press hesitates. And this is what I try to explain in my video that I made this week about WikiLeaks. The reason it hesitates to go there is that it's part of the accountability system that failed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think underneath the reactions to Assange and Joe Klein's kind of comments, right, and these disdainful attitudes, like the public editor of the New York Times washing his hands of the source of documents that the Times is publishing the same day, you know, underneath that, it's that we don't want to open this door of how the accountability system failed, because we are part of that. And we never went back and looked at how it happened. We never did the accounting for ourselves.
Right.
And so a lot of times in the reactions to Assange, what you're seeing is this attempt to elude their own knowledge that not just the watchdog press, but the whole accountability system failed. Mm. And that's why, even though there is an anarchist element to what Assange is doing, I understand where it's coming from, right? Because of this huge failure.
Well, it's saying basically that anarchy is one of the elements in the spectrum of politics, and it's been underrepresented. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been enough anarchy. It's been too controlled. It's a bubble. It's like in so many aspects of our existence, we have perpetuated a bubble. You know, maybe those people that are not talking about this because of the advice, they Columbia students got that advice, maybe they should do the exact opposite. You know, if you were in Romania, and that got Adrian's attention, Adrian's from Romania. If you were in Romania in the days of Nicolae Ceaușescu, would you have been better off taking the advice from a member of his State Department, or would you have been better off following your instincts and saying the truth about what that government was actually doing? Adrian, were you there? So what would have happened? Would you have been grab a mic? Yeah.
Back then, it would have been better if you just follow your instincts and.
Right, but maybe you would have gotten killed in the process too. But yeah. Oh, I need the mic back for more music later. I'm gonna do a closeout.
The greatest essay ever written about this, Dave, was by Václav Havel, who became a president of the Czech Republic.
There you go. He's a perfect example, right?
And it's called The Power of the Powerless.
Yeah.
And it's about how in a situation where speech is restricted, the people who do speak up under those conditions have huge power.
Right.
And there's a little bit of that element coming out with WikiLeaks. It's that the very mania to secrecy that governments, especially ours, have been submerged in is what creates the power of WikiLeaks in a moment like this.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. This is in the category of questions we do not dare to ask. So, is this what it felt like in the Soviet Union before they collapsed? In other words, is this...
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, first of all, okay, so there's a normalcy in Washington. If you actually watch the news and read the news, which I don't do a lot of, but I do enough of to know what they're talking about, this is not what they're talking about.
Right.
They're talking about the budget. They're talking about taxes
for
the oligarchs in our country. They're talking about, bankrupting our country in a way that, it's the contradictions are... glaring.
But if you go over to the State Department.
Yeah, no, they're talking, probably, you think, well, see, the thing is, Jay, I think that the news is talking about this, but I think that the back channel, it's talking about the budget, and I think the back channel in Washington is talking about this.
Yeah.
That this is all, that's all what they're trying to sell for preoccupation.
There's a need to repair the rupture and go on as if everything's
right.
normal.
Right, so let's go back now.
Let's go back.
Yeah. We need new institutions. That was the thing that resonated with you. And that was what the point was for my piece to Berkman. I have not gotten a response. I did not direct that. I didn't send a copy of that to anybody at Berkman. Mm-hmm. I just wrote it, okay,
mm-hmm.
and put it out there.
So what kind of institution could they be?
Well, a lot of this is very much like the stuff that I was talking about with Future Safe Archives. That, first of all, Future Safe Archives need to be safe against despotism. That is one of the things you need to be safe against. It's not enough just to have technical safety, meaning that, you choose your standards, carefully, and you don't use software that you might not exist in the future, et cetera. The technical issues are different from the political ones, which, the only way to defend against that one is to send our archives into deep space, because, the danger is we're going to self-destruct, and if our goal is to have some of the intelligence of our civilization survive us, or survive our lifetimes, our lifespans, really there is no other way to do
it. Right, but archives are future-pointing, and past.
But now we're talking about today.
But we're talking about the present.
And you know, this is something that troubles me about WikiLeaks also, is that they are not doing everything they could to be safe today. They're doing a lot of the same kinds of things that a commercial website would do, or that Wikipedia would do. I mean, Wikipedia have a lot of questions about Wikipedia, and they don't get answered, okay? And when they start getting answered, then the Wikipedia mob comes in and starts attacking personally the people who ask the questions. So, you know, I mean, the question about Wikipedia is, you know, why do you raise $25 million when your site only costs $2 million to run?
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, obviously somebody's making some money here, right? That's a small issue. But why is WikiLeaks not distributing the full archive now? All right, and I'm just saying, I'm not asking you to answer it. I'm just saying that's a question that we need clarity on that. The other one was, why isn't this stuff primarily going out over BitTorrent,
mm-hmm.
which is safe,
mm-hmm.
whereas and can't be denied. I mean, everything can be denial of service, but the DOS BitTorrent. I said this in my piece. Effectively, you have to shut down the internet,
right?
And that, believe me, they don't want to do that. The government does not want to do that. The government, the day the government does that, the Chinese government can't shut down the internet.
Right.
If the Chinese government doesn't want to do it, you got to believe the American government.
Well, I think that is
doesn't.
The right strategy. Is,
right.
Is to make it so that you have to shut down the internet to shut down WikiLeaks.
Right.
But they seem to have made some moves in that direction. They've...
Well, why not right from the get-go? Why wasn't all that stuff primarily available as a BitTorrent download the instant... You know, because he was probably playing it up for the maximum drama. Probably because he did want to get shut down. Probably because he did want to go through this whole experience.
Possible.
You know, as you're certain about certain things, this is, you know.
Well, he did say that about his contract with Amazon.
He did?
Yeah. He said in The Guardian that the reason that he did it was to demonstrate that Amazon is not what it says it is.
Well, there you go.
Think.
There you go. So we're being manipulated.
Well,
he admits it. He says it. If his goal is the truth, Jay, what does it matter that Amazon isn't...
I don't know if he's ever said... I don't think it's a good rule of thumb to say his goal is the truth. He's got many different kinds of goals.
What's our goal? Is your goal and my goal the truth? Yeah.
Well...
I'm not interested in the aggrandizement.
My goal is to preserve conditions in which publics can arrive at the truth. And not just elites, and not just people in the know. And in order for that to happen, people arrive and learn the truth of what their governments are doing at different rates, in different ways. And so we need the critical information to not just be published once somewhere,
right.
but to be persistently there right. for them to access. And we need a range of people calling attention to it. And there's a whole politics of attention that surrounds the politics of information flow. And it's the two things together that make it possible for publics to learn what is going on in an interdependent world and in their name. So that is my goal. And I actually think that when people say they have the truth and this is the truth, almost always that leads to shutting down of those conditions because absolutism about truth is one of the things that gets in the way of freedom of information. So that's my goal.
I don't understand that last statement.
Well, when people think that they have the truth and it's and they become kind of like absolutist about it, they quickly begin to see the normal conditions of communication as threat to that. And pretty soon they're on the road to shutting somebody up or propagandizing because they know the truth. And, you know, if you look at the way communication in like Soviet society worked, it was always about the truth, the ideological truth as it was known with certainty by the party. And that's a huge tendency in politics and communication. So, that's why I think the focus should be on preserving the conditions that allow democratic publics to arrive at the truth, because people do that in different ways. And we need, you know, verifiable, secure conditions in which people can do that. And the internet is the greatest hope we have for that, on the scale that the problems themselves are on.
Yeah, but, you know, if you know too much about the internet, you know that, I mean, look, the Amazon thing was utterly predictable. I mean, and he knew that. Yeah. I knew that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to boycott Amazon because they did something that I knew that they would do. I mean, I could have factored that in beforehand. We could have had this.
I understand.
I think you're being very reasonable and courageous about this, Jay. I mean, you could easily, anybody, any one of us. I mean, I'm confused, you know, about what I'm supposed to do, what I'm meant to do. But at least I'm not doing what Joe Klein did.
Yeah. Right.
Or the guy who's the public editor of the New York Times.
Right.
You have to basically say I'm confused. You have to illustrate the confusion, you know.
Well, that's what I try to do in my video.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and then keep your ears open and then try to do what's right. The thing is that, you know, maybe the first question really is, you know, who are the friends of the internet, and how long is that list? It's not a very long list. You know, you don't look to the internet itself, because it's formed out of, these days, initially it was formed out of the government, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then over time, it has been transformed from being something that was a product of the government to something that was being a product of the oligarchy, of the huge corporations in the United States and elsewhere.
Right.
And you can't expect them to be friends of what we think of as the internet.
Right.
They're not going to be that. They aren't that. To expect them to be anything like that is ridiculous.
Right.
It's only an illusion that the internet appears to be open, because it actually is not.
Yeah, okay, I get that, Dave. But
But you know,
you can't just keep disillusioning people.
No,
okay?
No, I understand.
I'm not trying to be naive here.
No, right? Oh no, I didn't say you were. And the thing that's amazing about this is that the government wasn't more prepared to do something about this. That they didn't have. And by the way, I don't believe the government was doing the denial of service attacks. I really don't. The U.S. government. I mean, it was strictly, if there were denial of service attacks done by the United States government with the intention of shutting them down, they'd be shut down. They have serious scientists at the government. They know what they're doing.
I'm not so sure about that.
But I'm totally sure. You know, who did the Stuxnet thing? Have you been following that? Stuxnet is an amazing thing. It's done by Israel, obviously.
Oh, the Iranian
against
bug?
Yeah,
I have been following that.
Well, they have done a disassembly of it. We know exactly how it works. It's amazingly unsophisticated at the same time, amazingly sophisticated.
Okay, so we don't know who the friends of the internet are, but we do know who we have to protect the open internet against. It's both totalitarian or tyrannical governments and democratic governments. It's private companies. It's online mobs. It's complacent businesses. It's quiescent citizens. And the internet, which began, as you said, as a government project, is now heavily dependent, as Ethan Zuckerman said, on private companies that kind of administer public spaces. What we have to come to understand is that the only place the internet gets protected is in a global public sphere of citizens and institutions built for it. That's why I think organizations like, for example, Reporters Without Borders, right, which is an international organization not based in a state, not a company, is really important in these circumstances. And that's why their statement in support of WikiLeaks was really important. Also, as I put up at our site, Rebooting the News, or rebootnews.com, Stowe Boyd said that he thinks a Greenpeace model works for WikiLeaks. And what he means by that is it's a global NGO that has chapters in many countries, right, composed of activists and citizens who believe in the actions of that organization. And if Greenpeace in Japan, you know, is for one reason or another crippled or shut down, there's still Greenpeace in Australia, and there's Greenpeace in the United States. So he thinks that's a better structure for WikiLeaks than the really elusive, mysterious shadowy one they have now. So maybe it's something like that. But your question, you know, who are friends of the open internet, is a really good one. And one of the really interesting dimensions of that for me is, are professional journalists actually friends of the internet? And I think they don't know.
Well,
they don't know if they are or not.
Then it's like George W. Bush said, you know? If he ain't with us, he against us.
Yeah.
I think that I thought you were going to say something. I thought you were going to ask me the question.
Which one? I'll be happy.
The one that you just asked and answered.
Are professional journalists friends of the internet?
No, obviously not. They're not conflicted by their conflicts. They're very simple people. If they were ambiguous about friendship, they would think a little bit before they condemn, and they would stand up for free speech on the internet with the same zeal, even more zeal, because it's easier, it's more convincing if you stand up for somebody else's rights than standing up for your own.
Mm-hmm.
It means more to do that. It is better understood. But this is net a very narcissistic world. The press, the journalists, they really only see everything as a reflection on themselves.
Well, let me tell you about a little note I got from a friend of mine today who's a journalist. Says that they're working on this big project that involves a leak of government data, government database. They've been finding individual stories in it. They've been finding photographs of people who are mentioned in it. They're, like, ready to run it. But they want to release as much information as they can from this database. But the newspaper he works for is afraid of getting sued. The partners they're working with are afraid of getting sued. And so they're saying, this is why we need a WikiLeaks. And so I think there's huge potential for local.
Okay,
WikiLeaks.
that was a friend of the internet type thing,
yes,
that they did,
yeah,
and that they're doing.
Well,
if they're willing to let their ego take their own reputation take a hit, you know, in favor of us getting better information, then they are true zealots and they truly do believe in what they're doing. And these are, I think, there you have put your finger right on exactly what it means to be a friend of the internet. I mean. I think John Kennedy was too. Somebody has a tape of John Kennedy, President of the United States, saying that secrecy is terrible, mm-hmm, that we need to fight it, that secrecy is not consistent with democracy. And, you know, viewed from today's perspective, what heresy? What radical? You know, that's a John Perry Barlow type thing to say, but this was coming from the President of the United States. And remember, we thought that Obama was a Kennedy. In fact, whatever. Anyway, let me ask, I want to bring you around, because we don't have much time, believe it or not, we're almost out. What about Twitter? I mean, Twitter represents a very interesting case here.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, all their hype says that they would like to be seen as a friend of the internet. Yet,
right.
Yet, and so far, they appear to, they haven't said anything, but their actions are pretty, I mean, I noticed this. I didn't see,
yeah,
anybody else say anything about it, and I said, man, it's amazing that these WikiLeaks guys are able to use Twitter. And, you know, of course, you gotta believe that they're doing the same thing with Twitter that they're doing to Amazon, right? I mean, they're leaning heavy on Twitter because...
There's a story there for sure.
Oh.
And the reason it's so important is if WikiLeaks.org is down and the only way we can access the site,
yeah,
is through some substitute domain, the best way for them to tell us where to go... is Twitter.
You
right?
just, by the way, reinvented DNS. And that's, we did, or this is what's so amazing about this. This is the domain name system,
mm-hmm,
and it does, this is why they say the internet is very robust against outages.
Yes.
It's good, you know. Yeah, this is our fallback position. Do you smell something?
Yes.
I smell something burning.
I don't.
Yeah, maybe it's just in here. Our fan just went off. Let's keep going.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not seeing anybody else panic. Doesn't smell very good.
But Twitter,
Twitter
allows WikiLeaks to tell the world where the site is right now.
Yeah.
Which means it can move around much more easily.
Right. So let me ask you this. So what happens if they don't, if Twitter decides they have to cut them off? Then what happens?
Then we know a lot more about Twitter.
True. But now take the next step. What happens? I mean, now presumably we lose track of Wikipedia now. Wikipedia, WikiLeaks.
Right.
And now we can't find them.
Right. Well,
but you see, the problem here is this is why Assange is getting us in trouble. Because this is the whole point of BitTorrent. This is the whole point. It systematizes what you're talking about. It systematizes this idea that I don't need to know where you are, because in fact with BitTorrent you aren't any single place.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a lot of different places, and if one of them goes down, you know, they've created this network of mirror sites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that doesn't work if you don't know how to find the mirror sites.
Right.
What if Google shuts them down? You know, Google, by the way, is a good backstop too, just like Twitter is. So,
what? There should be a site for where WikiLeaks is right now that is just links.
They'll shut that down.
Whoever's
going to shut down WikiLeaks shuts down that site instead of shutting down WikiLeaks. That's the site.
Then you have an additional burden, but I suppose it is possible, sure.
You haven't accomplished anything, because it's just the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes the site to shut down.
Right.
That's why BitTorrent actually is a unique thing. So, you know, if they thought this through and they, you know, could say, okay, well, they didn't have the ability to think it through in advance, but if they were thinking it through now...
BitTorrent plus RSS.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that allows them to publish new items.
Right.
Those two technologies put together actually were invented for this purpose. That's, by the way, if you want to pop the stack, that's why FeedBurner was such a bad idea. Because when you centralize a decentralized technology like RSS, you're losing all the value of it.
Right.
You know, and so the whole point was to decentralize. And luckily, it did not subsume the whole Internet, so we still have that to use.
I have one thought to conclude this. What this has revealed for me is this big divide that was always there, but now it's clearer, between the statist people and the civil society. By statist, I mean S-T-A-T-I-S-T, is not just the people who work for the government and inside the secret world of diplomacy, but everyone who identifies with the government and who psychologically sides with the authority of the state and worries first about the fortunes of the state. Civil is everybody who's primarily locating their interests and their identity in civil society, which transcends states and companies. And what we really need is for people to stand up for the institutions of civil society. The state doesn't need our help. The institutions of civil society. And there is only one location for journalism as a profession and as a practice, and it is not in the statist sphere. It is in the civil sphere.
Yeah,
and any journalist who does not know this is incompetent to practice their craft.
Yep. I think you put your finger on it. I think that basically in the ideal, journalism exists to be a friend of the Internet.
Yes.
In the terms that we're talking about. It wouldn't have been put that way in the past, but that is exactly what it is.
Today, that is the
90 seconds.
The fact that we don't have a clear sense of that, and that they're not behaving, the best of them are not doing this, is the failure of, you know, this is why it was a rebooting the news moment, Jay.
That's why I've been thinking for 24 hours a day about nothing but this.
Right, you know.
For the last week.
Right, because it is the moment where you find out who is... And, you know, this is why the whole news system needs to reboot. I'm not going to ask you to tell me who those people were that asked you.
60 seconds.
But those people are part of the rebooted news system, the people that contacted you and said, how do we get this stuff onto WikiLeaks?
Yep. Which side are you on?
But I suggest at the last minute here, before I go to Girl from Ipanema, because that's how we're going to close this, okay? Aikavild, I forgot. Don't you hate it when that...
Colin, Tan, and Young. And
okay,
and
we're
the
gonna...
girl from Ipanema goes walking.
Let's go, guys. Where is it?
When she passes each boy, she passes...
It's not coming. Oh, I turned the sound off.
Yes, it was given this happiness.
10 seconds.
Great show. Bye, Dave.
Bye, Jay.